Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I'm Laura Rancourt.
And I'm Kim Crumbly, and together we are Counselor Accents.
And we are just so excited to have a special guest with us today who is going to talk all about the book that he wrote and whatever else he wants to talk about. He is the president of the Pennsylvania School Counselors Association, and he wrote a book all about technology tools that school counselors could use. So, Steve, why don't you introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about you?
I'm really excited to be here. I co-wrote the book with Angela Cleveland, my partner in crime. Actually, that's technically true, but I'm not allowed to discuss this part of a plea deal. But anyways, I wrote the book with Angela Cleveland, and we've been really excited. It sold out quickly over the summer, last summer. And then recently, the book has been doing incredibly well again. So we're really happy about that. I'm also the president-elect for the Pennsylvania School Counseling Association, School Counselors Association, starting this July. You can refer to me as El Presidente.
Okay.
Or Steve. mostly when it comes to either like school counseling associations, whether it comes to podcast interviews, whether it comes to the book, really the big thing is about making connections with counselors and helping counselors to make connections with each other and their students. And that's really been the passion of a lot of the work I've done.
That is so great and so needed, especially right now, whenever connection is what everybody is wanting, but we're struggling to figure out how to do that through technology only. So I feel like this book is, you were ahead of the curve. You had no way of knowing this was going to come, but you were ahead of the curve and you got this book written, and it is such a resource. I had sent a screenshot. Someone shared a screenshot of your book in a counselor group, and they said, "Does anybody have this book? It has been a lifesaver." And somebody said, "It was the best money I've ever spent." And so I sent that to her because I wanted her to know that this is really helping people. And then people started commenting, "I'm buying this today. Where can I find it?" So tell us a little bit about when you wrote this book, what sparked your vision for this?
Well, I have to be honest, like the vision really started with Angela. She and I had been very fortunate to collaborate with school counselors across the nation, talking about the future of work, role that computer science plays in education and the world of work, and just that we would highlight some of our favorite tech tools. So probably about like 3 or 4 years ago, in addition to that, we did an Ask a Webinar with some of the technology toolbox to highlight some of those pieces too. And whenever we're at conferences or just we would get emails, people asking for advice and consultation, and the volume just got to a point where we just felt like we needed to put something out there just to make it so that we could point to a reference. Because like the reality is there are a lot of great counselors out there that are always doing great work. And the work that we did in the book, it's not like it was new or that we had discovered fire. What we talked about were the practical tools and how they intersect with the framework as far as comprehensive school counseling. And so the one thing that we do differently in our book than what you'll see whenever you go into some other presentations and stuff is we really try and get to the core of it. And the core isn't the tech tools. The biggest piece as far as technology that people need to master is between the keyboard and the chair. And so we really try to incorporate some pieces as far as helping people to understand, like really complementing computational design thinking with instructional design.
That's so good. And I think that's what people are the most scared of with technology, because Kim and I have talked to a lot of people who have said, it's like we get both ends of the spectrum. People are afraid of using technology. They think students are just inundated with technology, so they want to take that all away. And then you've got the ones that are all technology.
Yeah.
And so I love what you said about really placing an emphasis on the counselor and just using this to accent. Can I say accent since we're counselor accents? But just using technology.
Go the way, Laura. Go the way.
To accent the counselor. So that's great.
Yeah, I mean, like when we really get into the work and like just no spoilers in the book, like the secret is just this real part. Like we design futures daily. Like we do intensive work deliberately with planning daily that doesn't have buttons on it. It's much more ambiguous, and we still create real results. And so if we can just put aside our apprehension, be willing to take some risks that doesn't actually have real person's lives at the other end of it, you can really do a lot of magical things. And some of it is trial and error, but like we do that on a daily basis without batting an eye. So we really wanted to take our counselors and just really share back with them their own messages and hopefully empower them with technology then.
So Steve, you said recently there's been a renewed interest.
Yeah.
Did this renewed interest come directly from the COVID that we're experiencing right now, this virus?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like without a doubt, Angela and I went into just writing the book as just a fun project that we could do together and just point to things. And I think we never really imagined that it would take off the way that it did. And with that being said, the book has without a doubt been on the bestseller, on and off the bestseller list throughout the past year, but it is palpably different now. Without a doubt, it is counselors looking to access those new tools to be connected to their students and be connected to their schools. I think we all long for that. I think we're all feeling those pangs of that distance from our students right now and trying to find different ways to foster that interaction. We've been doing it in my own building a lot of different ways. So I know like even today I was workshopping with my partner using Flipgrid, which was really one of the first pieces that we wrote for the book too. Just as far as different ways to have asynchronous conversations with our students. And so when we talk about like really the piece is like we understand what we want that outcome to be sometimes. And if not, like we have a sense of what it is. It is that connectedness. It is trying to build meaningful changes when it comes to students' academics, attendance, and discipline. And once we have a framework for understanding that, because again, we have that training, we have those tools to understand it, it's really about just trying to see what kind of technology might be able to best build some of those communication pieces, streamline it, or those kinds of things. It's not magic. I think it's commitment and it's vulnerability and it's creativity. And that's something that we sew into our daily practice every day.
So I think the necessity is going to further all it has been we have called this growth mind burst. So we have where we thought we were going to continue to do things one way, even getting scholarships at, opportunities out to students, wrapping up things for seniors, all these things that we're having to think differently than we've ever. But part of that, I told Laura, why didn't we think of this before? Why did it take this to make us do things that are so much easier in so many ways, the technology part of it? So
yeah, necessity is the muse of all innovation, right? So
yes. Do you foresee this being, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Do you foresee our new normal being more technology, or do you think we'll go back into our old way, or do you think, I think doors have been opened, but what do you foresee in our future in technology, in the technology line?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Like I definitely try and liken myself to just, I like futurism. I like just dabbling in like that kind of research. So I always, like a lot of the conversations we've been having as far as like developing policy has been based off of like foresight models as far as forecasting, as far as what to come. But we know, like we really do. Like what we know is gonna happen is that, is technology going to continue to rise and have a central role in our education? Yes, it already has. In addition to that, what we understand is, like, yeah, it's absolutely is stressful and bad right now. And realistically, it might continue that way in the fall. And so, like, we are going to have a chance to further develop some of these skills to connect with our students. What we understand in addition to that is the access to the technology, the access to our students sometimes, that's being clearly drawn on lines of color or in zip codes. And so there's also going to be an uneven application of this. So then our roles as school counselors to be facilitators and to advocate for the use of technology becomes so much more important during these times. And then what we know just looking at the last recession, which really gave a big rise to educational technology, was the reality is I think we're looking at significant school cuts at the same time. And with that, the process of building efficiency, the process of being engaging, the process of gathering data to demonstrate the roles and impact of school counselors and other helping professions becomes that much more salient. So yeah, I do feel like technology has its role, but more so what has a central role is the role of school counselors through all of this. I mean, what is more central now is we need to be champions of equity because we have seen the lines of equity more clear now than at any time before. I mean, like I have students in my own state right now that even if they live blocks away from the school, they might not be having access to that information because it's only being posted to a website in English. We have students who it's not about having access to technology. They literally don't have internet in that part of the state. Wow. So there are a range of concerns that are very clear, and we can see the differences just by driving a few minutes east, west, or north sometimes. But one of the central pieces is what we can understand that and create that continuity, not just across states, but nationally, is that one vision and voice that we share as school counselors. It is our training, it is our ethics and our foundation as far as putting the student first and making sure those outcomes are equitable in the most ways. Like those are the parts that really matter. Those are the parts where I think like raising the voice through podcasts like this, through a cheap book that you wrote with your friend one time just for jokes, like these become more salient because we get to platform the singular message, which is school counselors make a difference in students' lives, even in insurmountable circumstances.
Whew. Are you running for president?
I'm already president. So.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, bring that up again. Bring that up again.
I am just, like, everything you said, I wanted to, like, stand up and shout or...
Are we having church up in here right now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. No, I think what we do well. And I think one of our biggest problems is that we are often champions for students, but not champions for ourselves. And I think there's a chance we're really, one of the big things that we need to really centralize now as we're championing for our students is being very clear, like we do make a difference in students' lives. So now more than ever, we do need to advocate for the profession as well, because I think there's going to be a lot of concerns across the nation as far as what that looks like.
Steve, you're in a high school, is that correct?
I'm in a middle school. I've been trapped in middle school for most of my life now. But it fits with, I think, my penchant for low attention and sarcasm. And then I also coordinate my district's counseling team as well.
Very good. Very good. In your school, how large is your school?
My specific building is about 500 students, so I actually have the magic ratio of around 250, which is really great. I think some of the ways I've been able to excel in the profession has been because I have the ratio, and I don't apologize for that. I use that for any of the different activities that I've been able to do and demonstrate the impact of. It's because we have the numbers. With that being said, we understand ratios matter. Right. Now more than ever, when we're looking at training out a COVID crisis for a student mental health crisis or a student attendance crisis, like these are the places where having the ability to understand who those students in the building and who are the students or not, and building relationships with them to understand how they're being impacted, I think that really matters. And then, yes, making sure that we have the ability to gather data about that, whether it be using a tech tool or something like that, those can be really powerful tools, again, to make sure that we can do large swath shifts as far as the school climate and also the outcomes.
Yeah. Wow.
When you, in your school, I'm just picking your brain, thinking about going into the future. I'm in a very rural, poverty-ridden area. We're at almost 80% free and reduced. So it's really hard for a lot of the folks to have internet or to have access to internet. We're doing the best that we can, and but even providing it's really hard, and you understand that. So I'm just wondering, just both of you thinking about the future and listening to what you've even said in the fall, we may get to school and we may turn around and we may be back home. And I'm not hearing a lot of plans for that. Are you guys hearing, and how do we prepare for this happening again and getting that those services to those kids who don't have it. I mean, do you see that as something that needs to be taking place now for when this, if this happens again and they're sent back home? Does that make sense?
It does. So like when we're talking about, we're actually going to be announcing a webinar as far as like re-engagement strategies for students next week from the Pennsylvania School of Counseling, but that's with a professor from the University of Illinois. I mean, like now is some of the best time to talk about the planning, whether it be that we're going to still be doing distance learning or whether we're going to be doing like partial school days and having students rotate in and out or something like that. I think there are a lot of different proposals on the table that have a lot of significant impact when it comes to the lives of students. When we talk about things that we can do, like some of it isn't really rocket science, but there are some practical things we can do. Like our students who we are concerned about being attendance concerns as far as when we re-engage with schools, like we know who they are already. Mm-hmm. And we already have that data. You probably already know the students have had some interventions already. And it's likely that narrative is going to play out into next year somewhere. So there's a chance to do some early connection, early intervention with those students. In addition to that, some of these large-scale things that we can do is not necessarily like a mental health questionnaire, but some sort of wellness check to do outreach to our students. Like these are some practical tools that we can do, because then you're going to have the face value of having the students report that they might need a little bit of additional contact or putting them into some sort of tiered system before they walk into the walls of our school. And then also at the same point, you have the passive data benefit of the students who aren't responding to this. When you put out through your information pathways, you kind of have a sense of who's connected and who's not. That's some of the low hanging fruit. I mean, something that you can definitely do at this point is something that we do well, and it's definitely difficult in rural areas, but it's just reaching out and building those community partnerships with your behavioral health providers, your mentorship programs, your institutions of higher education, and really start building deliberate partnerships and talk about ways that they can really make some evidence-based impact on students' lives. These are some ways that we could really do so in the time that we have. Again, like with our students not with us, you know, if we can't provide the direct service, we're going to do the indirect service, and that's going to be management. We're going to be planning. We're going to start to build those data pathways so that when we hit the ground, we can hit running.
That's some good practical advice. And we've talked about, Laura and I've had discussions about indicators, you know, having, almost the number of indicators, the greatest need, what is our plan going to be for those students who have the greatest indicators?
Yeah. But again, like if we're going to screen, what are we screening them towards? What are we going to be able to connect them with?
Yeah.
This is a chance, where, again, we can do some more comprehensive planning to make sure that we have those targeted or more intensive supports available for them. Or if we don't have those, I mean, frankly, at least we know that at this point and can give us an opportunity to really spur to see what we can. So, I mean, like they're even... I mean, as far as the one thing that this does give rise to is a few different things like better health or was it teen counseling? Some of these online therapy programs are really scaling up at this point too. It might be for students who haven't had proximity to behavioral health providers, might be another on-ramp for them. There's been some really innovative things that have been done out of, I think it was Houston area. You know, they had the roving Wi-Fi buses where they were having the Wi-Fi wasn't being used in the building anyway, so they were retrofitting buses to be roving hotspots. I thought that was pretty amazing. Okay. And like you can see as far as like talking to your regional providers for like Verizon or AT&T, like in the absence of hotspots, they've been retrofitting phones to be mobile hotspots, which I thought was pretty great. So I think there are going to be continue to be unique public and private partnerships as well that can be done, hopefully to support. But it's not, like in my own experience, it's not been that people aren't willing. It's, again, it gets that central part as far as the design-based thinking, like distilling the problem down to something that we can take action about. And then at that point, just seeing what sticks against the wall, but not being afraid to imagine and create.
That's our thing too, just brainstorming and, throwing everything out there, no matter how crazy it sounds, and just seeing, hey, you never know what might come from it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had plenty of ill-conceived ideas that have gotten a lot of traction lately. So, yeah, you don't know.
Yeah.
I have been. You were talking about the AT&T and different providers. We've had several people step up as far as that's been really neat to see the heroes as look for the helpers, as Fred Rogers says. There's been a lot of.
And to me, guy, just saying.
You're right.
What? I didn't hear you. What?
The Pennsylvania guy.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Yes. I read his book and just kept on and on to Laura and made her read it. And, these people who have stepped up and, in our area, providing those hotspots and, you know, doing that free or, you know, very low cost and those where they can. I mean, some places are so rural. I know some people are still not getting the services, but it's been neat to see people step up and willing to do what they need to do to help these kids. So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the unique aspects of first school counselor leadership. I know we were talking to Forrest first, a mutual friend, Sandy Austin, who was one of the counselors at Columbine. And I think really what I love about Sandy and what she does so uniquely is it's not just as far as identifying the problems, but it's engaging people as being part of the solution as well. Again, there are plenty of people that I think are more than willing, but they need to be invited into being part of the process. And we as counselors, I think that's an aspect of our leadership which is unique. And I think it's also part of our leadership which can be transformative. So yeah, I think that's a powerful piece.
That is. Talk to the school counselor who may be listening, and maybe they're in their first or second year and they're just barely keeping their head above the water. Talk to that person about maybe some things that they could be doing now. And I know you touched on it, but they may be hearing these things thinking, I don't know where to start. I don't know how to connect my people to resources. What are some, Kim and I like to call them rubber meets the road, practical ideas that you could give that person?
Practical idea. We're all lost. We don't know where to start. And we're absolutely in this with you together.
Such the truth right there.
And such a comfort. This is new to everybody.
practical advice too. Like the reality is just from an apples to apples comparison, like the training that a first year counselor who has just completed their grad work, like your education, your training matters. And the reality is that we have counselors that graduate with 6-week graduate credits, which is probably about 20 to 30 more than possibly the building principal.
That's true.
And it's not piecemeal. Like the education that you've had really counts. It's targeted to change the lives of students, particularly in insurmountable circumstances. And this just happens to be what this looks like now. With it, like the things I would encourage you to do is to get plugged into your network. So make sure that you're not trying to do this by yourself, because none of us can do this by ourselves. So I think whether it be if you're getting into digital professional development, like Dope Podcast, for instance, or in addition to that, whether it be your state association or ASCA, these are going to be valuable tools to provide you with some of the best resources to navigate these times. Making sure that you have a lifeline, whether it is a counselor that you've befriended through Facebook or Twitter or something like that, and making sure that you have an active network of support. I think these are also things that can be beneficial as well. But also, I think we talked about before, just embrace the vulnerability. I think it is, at the end of the day, trying to do your best that you can and trying to be generally impactful as all of us are trying to reorient ourselves. But I think embracing that, being willing to take risks, because you're taking real risk for your students every day. So taking risk for yourself as far as seeing if this might be helpful, I think that's beneficial. Those would be some of the off-the-cuff things.
Great ideas. Yeah. So tell us, going back to your book, tell us some of your favorite tech tools before all this happened, and then let's talk about something that you would say is invaluable right now during this.
Yeah, when we talk about like the tech tool pieces, some of the, we just really piecemealed like not just what were our favorite tech tools, but what were some of the things that we felt really intersected really well with what we understood to be the most common practices in school counseling. So those were kind of things. We were doing a training down in St. Martin, and we were joking about, because I'm an avid practitioner in the Church of Google. I do used most of their applications. And it really is just the utility and ease. And one of the biggest things that I often use would be the combination of Google Forms and Google Sheets. Those are going to be really powerful tools for school counselors to do outreach, to collect a lot of information and data or connect. Like, again, that questionnaire of how you're doing. When we started, went from school closures to starting our distance learning practice, that was one of the first things that we sent out. It was an easy way to figure out who are the students I most need to connect with quickly. And off of those, there's also a lot of great ways that Google Sheets will actually process super large data sets. I actually track the number of school counselors in Pennsylvania across the past like 5, 7 years, and can look at that data and break it down like just with a button click, because Google Sheets will do that for you. Like, I took the time to learn all those formulas and stuff like that, and you just don't need them these days anymore. So I think there are, and particularly when we talk about ways as far as connecting with our students, I said before, it wasn't necessarily revisiting the book, but it was, again, just trying to revisit what were my biggest problems. Like, as much as I adore Google products, my computer is not liking Google Meet right now, so I've been having some significant difficulty with it. And then our students just don't have Zoom, which is something I use very frequently. So Flipgrid becomes a very useful tool for me, because I can engage my students in asynchronous conversations and still have meaningful conversations, identify students I need further follow-up with, and it's still going to feel kind of natural. So that's one of my personal favorites right now. We're currently trying to talk about, again, just because our students are not with us doesn't mean that the learning stops, and particularly things that might not seem like a priority still can be very strong priorities, like when it comes to post-secondary planning and career readiness. So we really, at the end of this week, we're going to try and take our students to most of the campuses around us to have them have their first introduction to what like a post-secondary experience can, to create some of that exposure. We aren't doing that now, but what we are doing in lieu of that, I think we can use something like Google Expeditions or something else to really provide them with a chance to have some of those immersive experiences still, to have that level of exposure to spark some conversation, and still at the same time continue them in the past as we're doing this through distance learning. Again, when we talk about what the tech tool is, it's the tech tools that you have available to you. When we talk about what the tech tool is, it's the tech tool that frankly may have not been invented yet, or the one that you have shelved for a while. It's really about what you are able to identify as a student need and then distill it down as much as possible, and then just try from there.
Well, I think this is a great time for us to explore technology that we've been intimidated by in the past. We've got the time, and we have the need right now. I think it's also a great time to really find out what the kids are interested in. You know, instead of just, we do a needs assessment and everything, but I think this is going to be an opportunity to, you know, you hear about Genius Hour and things like that, but giving them that leeway to create and see what they want to do. Like you said, the technology that hasn't been invented yet, maybe they are about to invent something out of necessity. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah. When are you both dropping your next TikTok video?
I have seen more middle school, with my middle school students, I have seen things, Steve, that these eyeballs cannot unsee. Some of it is absolutely great. But yes, those kids loving the TikTok at my school. So I'm assuming they do at yours too. How about at the elementary level, Laura? Are you getting a lot of TikTok?
Yes, and they're so funny. And I find the humor in it. But
and they can, I mean, the way they move in those things. Good night.
This is the funniest one. This fifth grader was trying to be, you know, just like the hero of fifth grade and everything. Speaking of hero, though, he had superhero bed sheets. And it was just so funny to me. Like, he's trying to act all big and bad. And I'm like, you have, like, Spider-Man on your sheet.
I have Spider-Man on my sheets too, man.
I had a feeling, Steve. He may have been very proud of those. Spider-Man.
tell our listeners where they can find your book, because it is a necessity. You need to go get it right
now. Yeah, I mean, you can try to get it on Amazon. It's been sold off on and off for the past 2 months. You can also go directly to Corwin Press. They also, you're able to buy it directly from the website there. You're welcome to come over to my house as long as you stay 6 feet away. I think I've got a couple left, and I'll sign it for you personally.
Okay.
Other than that, I mean, like, really, just talking about Counselors for Computing, the work that we do there and the message that we share nationally there, talking about the book and, like, the message we try to share internationally there. Like, it comes to this fundamental piece that is so salient now, but is it a new message? It's not that the world is changing. The world has already changed, and it's going to continue to change. And really, as far as counselors, we're focused on the outcomes, but we focus and create those pathways for the outcomes through the process. And so we do highlight different ways as far as to get more of that process using design principles in there. But mostly, for you to understand the design principles, you need to just understand your roles of school counseling and how comprehensive school counseling programs really change the lives of students in schools.
It sounds like you are just really coupling the basics with technology and just marrying the two perfectly.
Yeah, it really is. Like, we stick to the basics. We throw in just an introduction to ed tech, and then we throw in a lot of, like, 80s and 90s pop culture references, and that's the book.
It's wonderful. Well, we will bring our book, or wherever we see you, which I'm sure we will someday. We'll have our book. We want it signed.
I'm going to sign it on my behalf. All you do is make an S and then make it look squiggly. That is what all my...
Oh, so I'm you're clearing me to go ahead and sign your name.
Good.
Good deal. Thank you, Steve. Thank you for being on with us.
A real pleasure.
Bye-bye. Hey, Laura. Laura.
Hey.
You got a pick of the week for me?
I do. I have a story for you.
Good.
Okay. I was sitting at the kitchen table working the other day, and I had given my girls a jar of peanut butter, and they were supposed to share. I don't normally let them eat out of the peanut butter jar. We were at the end, and so I gave each of them a spoon and said, have at it. So about 10 minutes later, I hear, hey, Mom, I made a little bit of a mess. And I look over, and my three-year-old is coated in peanut butter. Her arms are covered. Her legs are covered. Everything is covered in peanut butter. And I was going to get a picture of her, but I thought 20 years from now, I'm not going to remember that this was peanut butter, because it looked like a dirty diaper, like baby nasty.
I wish you had done it anyway.
So I thought 20 years from now, I'm going to be thinking, that's disgusting, and someone should have turned you into Child Protective Services. So I said to her, I didn't get upset, because I heard one time, we have this theory in our home that if it's going to be funny one day, then we're going to laugh about it today. And I thought, this is one of those things. It's going to be funny when we retell it one day. So we're not going to get upset, because we can clean it up. Was anybody hurt? No. So we cleaned her right up. It took a whole lot of Dawn liquid detergent to get her clean. But she had rubbed it all over her stomach too. And I said, now what were you doing with the peanut butter? And she said, I was trying to be a unicorn. I don't know what kind of peanut butter unicorn we have going on, but that is a typical.
That was the magic peanut butter that was going to turn her into a unicorn. But now she was dressed as a ladybug I saw earlier today.
A minute ago, yeah, she was.
So red gloves and everything. So she has quite the imagination.
They both do. I don't know. Our Instagram, I posted a picture of Victoria Bell yesterday, or a video of her dressed in a penguin costume. We went to McDonald's because, you know, I have to get my drink every day.
You do.
And we went to McDonald's, and she was dressed in a penguin costume, but she was barking. So she was a barking. So I don't know where their imaginations.
Where did they get that?
I know where it came from, but it's funny to see in little person form.
It's so neat. So funny.
Tell me your pick.
Well, my pick is, I'm in love with this man. So if he's, and he is, you know, I'm going to get it.
So you're talking about Philip, your husband?
Oh, that's no, your pick? Not Big 12. No.
Okay.
I'm talking about James Dean, not the James Dean that passed away in a car wreck in the 50s or 60s. I'm talking about James Dean, the author of Pete the Cat.
Oh, okay.
So every day, James Dean comes on at, for our time central, it's 12 noon. And my son wakes up and he's so excited about James Dean going to be on at 12. And he doesn't just do a little bit with the kids. It lasts a good long while. And aww, he reads to the kids and he draws and he does all these things. And I just think how wonderful that he spends so much time. And I'm thinking about how he's having to prepare. It's like he's doing lessons every single day.
Yeah.
But now we are Pete the Cat addicts. So I have got a stack this big. We have other people are buying him Pete the Cat stuff and it's coming in from Amazon. So he's got his collection, he's calling it, of Pete the Cat stuff. But hats off to these authors and artists and people who are continuing, I mean, days and days later, and they're still with it. And he's one of those that's still with it. And he is such a cool cat.
He is. He's
such a cool cat. So hats off to James Dean.
You know, my girls call him Pizza Cat.
Pizza Cat. I'm sure he's been called Pizza Cat before.
Sure. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to get my girls on that because I don't think I knew that he was still doing that. And
still doing it every single day. It's the highlight of our day, Monday through. A lot of people are doing one day a week, and I'm appreciative of that. Like LeVar Burton will do one day for elementary and one day for middle school. But Pete the Cat is every day, Laura. Every single day, Monday through Friday. We are the biggest fans now. So amazing. He's amazing.
Oh, hats off to you, James Dean.
Absolutely. Hats off. And listen, he's getting some money from us because, like I said, we are having to get everything Pete the Cat. So, we're loving it. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening, and know that you can, Steve said it today when he said, find a place to belong, find a group that you can join. And we are that group. We want you to feel comfortable and come into our Counselor Accents group. Tonight, the day that we're recording this, we have a group Zoom discussion over one of our previous podcasts. And if you were only in that group, then you could join this group discussion with us, and we'd love to have you there.
And so go join our popcorn. I'm serving. I didn't want to say that right now.
Oh,
and Coke.
That is a Southern thing.
It's a Southern thing.
We'll have the snacks. But join that group, Counselor Accents group. We always have fun things to talk about in there. We also have a Counselor Accents page where we just give you updates about things we have going on. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. And you can find us at our website, counseloraccents.com. And of course, don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcast and share it with a friend. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.